Now, our special guest this hour, as we're trying to do every day this week, is get people with original points of view on how to come out of COVID-19, how to live with it, and some of the debates that have been raging right around Australia and the world for that matter. And this morning, our special guest is one of the greatest broadcasters in Australian history, Alan Jones, former 2GB breakfast host. It's good to have him back on Breakfast Radio. 35-year radio career that started at 2UE in 1985 and delivered 226 consecutive rating surveys victories. What people in Victoria particularly may not be aware is that Alan was also one of the great coaches. He coached the Wallabies for 4 years to 86 victories from 102 games, including the Grand Slam, where he defeated England, Ireland, Wales, Scotland and the Barbarians. 1985, he was the coach of the year. And Das, it gives me great pleasure to say, he also gave a great motivational speech to the Collingwood Football Club before the 1990 Grand Final, which the boys actually said.
Of all the things he's done, that may be the worst thing he's ever put his name to, I suspect.
Alan, welcome back to Breakfast Radio and welcome to Victoria. And of course, you can see Alan on Sky News Monday through Thursday at 8 p.m. Welcome to Triple M's Hot Breakfast.
My pleasure. Thank you to both of you.
Alan, we wanted to get you on. Luke, in particular, has spoke to the Premier the other day. He's got a lot of feedback on the fact that he took the Premier on in not just accepting what has been presented to Victorians, particularly with COVID-19 and the lockdowns. Can I ask you, you've been on this for a fair while, what is your take on COVID-19? Is this a pandemic where the world should be shutting down, or is your belief that this is something we have to learn to live with quickly, sooner rather than later, or in fact we should have from the word go?
Well, Eddie, the best way to answer that kind of question is to say that it really oughtn't to be the view of Eddie Maguire or Luke Darcy or Alan Jones or anybody else. In all of these things, I pride myself in doing a lot of reading, and when this all began, I just read from what are the outstanding epidemiologists around the world. And all their views seem to be ignored. But we don't need to go any further than the Prime Minister himself, because the Prime Minister on the 15th of March addressed Australia. It was one of those first press conferences. And I quote you his exact words. He said, "The truth is that while many people will contact this virus," this is the Prime Minister of Australia, "it's clear, just as people each year get the flu," this is a more severe condition than the flu. And then he says, "but for the vast majority," as I said last week, "for the vast majority, around 8 in 10 is our advice. It will be a mild illness and it will pass. However, for old Australians and those that are more vulnerable, particularly those in remote communities and those with pre-existing health conditions, it is a far more serious virus, and that is our concern. Our aim in all of this is to protect the most vulnerable." Now, we've gone off the rails since all of that. The fact is...
When did that happen, Alan, in your estimation, in respect to the Prime Minister? Where did it go off that tangent and onto the one we've gone to?
Eddie, that is easy to answer, but I'll provide a very biased answer. We're all biased. I just think all these chief medical officers don't really have the credentials to be advising on all of this. They're not pandemic experts. They're not epidemiologists. I mean, the woman in Queensland, for God's sake, she was an administrator at the Rockhampton Hospital. And now she's bellowing instructions to everybody as about what should happen. I can look at people like, for example, Sukrit Bhakti, who's a microbiologist and infectious disease epidemiologist, who simply said back in March, all these measures are leading to self-destruction and collective suicide based on nothing but a spook. Dr. Joel Kepner, the professor of community health sciences and surgery at Manitoba University in Canada, said, "I've seen pandemics, one every year. It's called influenza and other respiratory illness viruses. I've never seen this reaction, and I'm trying to understand why." But if you then take perhaps the leading epidemiologist in the world, regarded by many, who is Professor John Ioannidis from Stanford University, where he's the Professor of Epidemiology and Population Health, and he said, "If we had not known about a new virus out there and had not checked individuals with PCR tests, the number of total deaths due to influenza-like illness would not seem unusual this year. At most, we might have casually noted that flu this season seems to be a bit worse than average. The media coverage would have been less than for an NBA game between the two most indifferent teams." Now, what we've suddenly done in panic, ignoring the Prime Minister's own words of March 15, then we started to close businesses down for people that are not vulnerable. We've actually stopped kids going to school, and that's still happening in Melbourne, denying them critical periods in their education. The hospitality industry's gone, and it's cost us, what, nearly $400 billion simply to look after people who should never have been put out of work in the first place. And so now we've got these figures. There are reports every day. And my concern, Eddie and Luke, is we're not being told the truth. There should be a major advertising campaign taken out to explain to Australians that the figures that come out every day from the World Health Organization, which are compiled by health authorities in every major country in the world, indicate every day 1% of the cases are serious. Currently, that's 29 in Australia, 29. 99% of the cases, it could not Alan Jones, 99% of the cases are in fact mild. Now, then there's a report which comes out every week called Communicable Diseases Intelligence. And I'm reading the August report here, and it says, and no one has reported any of this. This is the government's own document. Comorbidities, and just I think everyone understands what that means. Yeah. I mean, I've got a stack of them. A comorbidity is something that might lead to death while another infection takes over. So if you've had cancer, and I've had five of them, and if you had diabetes, and I've had all of that, if you had melanomas, I've had that, all of those things are likely to contribute significantly, even if you just got the flu or whooping cough. So the report here says comorbidities were common in those COVID-19 cases admitted to Australian hospitals. 78% recorded at least one of the specified comorbidities. And here's the key. Only 9% recorded no comorbidity. Now, 9%, that means only 9% of people died with the from the virus, not with it, from it, 9%. It goes on to say the symptoms reported by COVID-19 cases in Australia are consistent with a mild respiratory infection in the majority of cases. Now, the public are not told this. And we've got a survey yesterday from the Red Cross that says 80 to 34-year-olds are terrified of going anywhere near a doctor or going outside because they think they're going to die if they catch this bloody virus. And this is because the public have never, not one politician has said, now, can I just urge a bit of caution to everyone around Australia, 99% of these cases are mild. I don't want you covered in fear. I don't want you overtaken in fear. But Berejiklian and Andrews and Morrison, all these people, Palaszczuk, they thrive on this fear stuff. Berejiklian says, we're on a knife edge. We're on a knife edge. People think, for God's sake, I can't go anywhere. Now, I don't want Eddie and Luke, I don't want the government looking after my health. I can look after that myself. And if Australians are going to surrender their health well-being to government, well, what will they surrender next? Well, I'll tell you what they've surrendered, massive freedoms. And what's happening in Melbourne, you've got 5 million people living like battery hens. And it's totally unacceptable. The mental consequences of this, the incidence of suicide is astonishing. But many of these businesses have been closed down. I'm talking to you now. I live in Macquarie Street in Sydney, and right over on my left is the Opera House. Beside the Opera House are about 3, 5, 8, 10, 11, 14, 14 umbrellas. They're all businesses. None of those have been open since February. I mean, this nation can't recover from any of this sort of stuff. And they pretend that Frydenberg will say, oh, yes, we're on the way back and so on. What absolute horse manure. We can't recover from a debt of over $400 billion and businesses who will never, ever be able. I mean, the deferred mortgage payments, which are now falling due about September for about 200,000 businesses in this country, total $6 billion. How the hell are we going to pay all that back? So this is all because the Prime Minister went off the rails from his statement of March 15. It'll just be a mild flu for most of us, he said. Well, he was wrong on one instance. He said 8 out of 10. It's actually been 9 out of 10. And so I just think there should be a national advertising campaign to tell people the truth. There are the figures. The World Health Organization says 99% of the cases are mild. Here are the figures for Australia. That in basically in hospital at the moment, we've got 26 people around Australia, apart from Victoria, of course, and that bloke's made a complete mess of things because he employed private security guards when they should be managing the quarantine in hotels, and 90% of all cases have derived from that. But at the same time, it doesn't justify locking everybody down and shutting every business down, but the bloke won't listen to Bunnings. I mean, won't listen to Wesfarmers. Wesfarmers can't get a meeting with Daniel Andrews. When you get a meeting with him, he listens and then does the exact opposite. Although I must say today, he's now backtracked a bit and said, well, look, I'm going to improve the testing regime. So I'm going to improve the way in which we can monitor whether people have been tested and whether they go, whether they've gone somewhere else and contacted it with others. But the basic issue, Eddie, is if you get positive, nothing's going to happen to 99% of people. And I run into people every day and they're bloody terrified. I mean, the fear and alarmism is astonishing, and it's un-Australian.
Alan, I think a lot of us were particularly upset on Sunday when the Premier had his press conference and he said it's not even a 50-50 choice. The science is in. There is no other pathway apart from extreme lockdown, which will take our state into the most extended period of lockdown in the world. And what I've been trying to do since earlier in the year is just to say, let's dissect the numbers as you did. We read out cases and we read them out, but we don't do them with context. We don't do them with context of excess deaths from previous years. We don't do them with context of what would happen, as you just described, the season. Well, can I play you? Goes for a minute 38. We had a bit of a debate, Ed and I, earlier today. A caller rang in. He's an ex-resident of Belgium. And he said, this is my old country. 11 million people live in a very, very tiny, condensed space. I'll just play this. It goes for just a bit over a minute. I'm keen to get your thoughts on a country and other parts of the world who are now living with the virus, who've chosen to go a different path. Have a listen to this from earlier today.
There's been 9,909 deaths in Belgium from 88,000 coronavirus cases, 18,000 recoveries. So 10,000 people have died of coronavirus in Belgium.
So what it becomes interesting, Ed, is
10,000 people.
Professor Doherty talked to us about it. Was a stat called excess death. So this is where you need a mature discussion around this to say, you know, what are people dying of normally? What would they have previously? Were they elderly population who are going to be at risk from other factors like respiratory illness or flu? So sometimes the raw numbers need more research behind it to just say,
I'll give you these numbers. Belgium has the second highest deaths per million rate in the world at 854. It's also included the deaths of non-hospitalised people who are suspected of having the virus, but not tested positive to its overall total.
Because what's also happening then, you're not taking into account the deaths from extreme lockdown. You're not taking into account the onerous
lives lost from deaths.
Yeah, compared to what would have happened if you hadn't have done that strategy.
Right. I'll still point to that. There's still 10,000 deaths there, and it's a pretty small country, and it hasn't worked in Belgium, I wouldn't have thought.
How many people die every year in Belgium? How many would have died from last year compared to this year?
Excess
deaths, you know.
Yeah, well, we'll also look at that. But on that one, Das, again, though, when you have a look at the figures where the flu figures are down and the COVID ones are up, if the flu figures had been up at the same time, there would have been an amazing amount of deaths.
Now, has one been substituted for the other? Because, you know, 4,000 Australians... 4,000 Australians died last year of the flu. 350,000 laboratory tested cases of the flu last year. So we live with that.
We haven't got them. They haven't died because we've got the hygiene right and things like that.
Alan, we've got 600 medical doctors in Melbourne pleading for a different path. They've written to the Premier, and that was the question I asked him. Will you take into account a broader perspective? Will you let other medical experts find a more humane way out of this? What do you think about that discussion?
Look... I've heard all that a million times. If I just take the United States of America, the deaths as a percentage of the population is 0.004%. There are more people die every year from drug doses, overdoses and suicide in America than have died from coronavirus deaths. But if you just take the Australian thing and bring it home to highlight the alarmism here, there are 451 people die every day in Australia. 451 people every day. There are 65 million people die in the world every year. 65 million people. Now, I can only go on the thing that Andrews talks about, the science, but he chooses his science. Now, Professor Woolhouse, because I'm really concerned about these Melbourne people, I don't understand how any of them are going to come out of this being locked up. They don't live like Eddie, like you live and I live and Luke lives. Yeah. These people are in, you know, 1- and 2-bedroom places. They've got crying children. They're meant to be going to school. They don't have computers, many of them. I mean, it is unbelievable to force people into this environment. You've got Professor Woolhouse. Now, Professor Woolhouse advises the British government on pandemic issues. He is called, in fact, a member of the scientific pandemic influenza. And he said, this is 2 weeks ago, lockdown was a panic measure. And I believe history will say trying to control COVID-19 through lockdown was a monumental mistake on a global scale. I never want to see a national lockdown again. Now, the Lancet Medical Journal is the most respected medical journal in the world. It's been going since 1883. And it said only a month ago, quote, in our analysis, full lockdowns and widespread COVID testing were not associated with reductions in the number of critical cases or overall mortality. So when they talk about the science, which science? For example, Michael Levitt is a Nobel Prize winning scientist at Stanford University. I think you'd know a bit more than Sutton and Jeanette Young in Queensland and Kerry Chant in New South Wales, because you've got these leaders who are like ventriloquial dolls. Once the chief medical officer says, well, it's biblical writ. Well, Michael Levitt said lockdowns are, quote, a huge mistake. Professor, Nobel Prize winner, the professor of theoretical epidemiology at Oxford University, Sunetra Gupta, a woman, said, I urge Australia to abandon its selfish and self-congratulatory lockdown tactics. Now, I've quoted Benjamin Franklin many times, who was one of the founders, founding fathers of America. And he said, basically, those who would give up essential liberty, which of course is what's happening across Australia, it's not just Victoria's in lockdown, every state's in lockdown, it's just that Victoria's worse than everybody else. I mean, they say New South Wales is terrific. Well, the Tamworth Music Festival's just been closed. And the Tamworth Council said, we can't have the music festival. Why? Because the Tamworth Council said you can't have it? No, they have said we could not, under the regulations that are being applied by the Berejiklian government, we could not possibly conduct a festival. We'd run the risk of massive fines and costs. This is a nonsense. And we've got a situation here where I had a bloke yesterday came to me. He's in the venue business. He's cancelled 117 weddings. 117 weddings. The bloke was crying. And he said, I've got 3,000 square metres. Berejiklian says, oh, 4 square metres. You've got to distance yourself 4 square metres. Well, he said, 4 out of 3,000 goes 750. I'm not allowed more than 150. But hotels are allowed 300. But then if you go into the bush, no one monitors that. It's merry hell if you go to Berrima or wherever, or Mudgee or somewhere. And you've got Benjamin Franklin who said, I mean, those who give up essential liberty to purchase a little temporary safety deserve neither liberty nor safety. I mean, I think these people are dangerous people. I don't want my life and my health in the hands of Scott Morrison, Daniel Andrews, or whatever. What you have a look what their credentials are in it, to be running the country. I mean, you might make them the mayor of Hurstville or the Morven mayor and let them into the Morven town hall. But if you lined them up, Eddie, would you give these people a job? Seriously. And they've never surrendered 1 cent. This is a private sector attack. Every public servant continues on all their money. They still get the dough that they had before this began. No leadership by example. Oh, but we're all in this together. We're not in all this together. I mean, it's just sad. There are people out there who will never recover. I spent all of last night, the night before last night, trying to save the life of a 16-year-old. And basically what they're being asked to do, denied going to school and all the rest of the kid can't handle it. There's that man in Queensland, poor bugger, a cricket coach, 32 years of age. His wife is pregnant with triplets. And the family have admitted what happened. They said he couldn't handle COVID. He walked out one morning, this is last Wednesday morning, week ago today, stepped in front of a truck. He's dead. Do these people understand what they're doing to the psychological, emotional and mental well-being of people apart from the financial well-being? And I don't know how many of these people are going to recover. And I just think there should be a national campaign to tell people the truth. We've never been told the truth. And start with Scott Morrison's statement on the 15th of March.
Alan, it's been a pleasure having you on. We invite people to come on and have their say. As always, in the build-up to your interview today, we said we wanted you to come on because you always come with your scholarship and your research. And it's been fascinating listening to you this morning, mate.
And I'm just trying to see if we can get Alan off the fence and work out what Alan really thinks. Thought he left
next
a bit
time,
on the
Alan,
table
have a
there.
Go.
just sat on the fence a little bit there, Alan. We'll see you next time if we can get you to warm in.
Sit on the fence, Eddie. Only get splinters.
Exactly. Alan, we can see you on Sky News, and congratulations on the ratings there, Monday to Thursday at 8 p.m. And you're looking in rude health for all the maladies that you have had to overcome over the journey. But thanks very much for coming on Triple M's Hot Breakfast, and don't make yourself a stranger. We'd like to have you on throughout the course of the year.
Anytime. Many thanks.
SoundCloud Radio.
I'm Juice WRLD. I don't want to ruin this one.
Hear Australia's freshest playlist, Fresh Pressed.
Late nights in the middle of June, he waves been faking me out.
What's next in music is first on SoundCloud Radio.
I'm trying to get you on your road tonight, baby, you know it.
On DAB Radio and Radio App now.
SoundCloud Radio.